Magandang umaga and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, EJ David, joining you from Degayacuk, the lands of the Dena'ina. Today's show is very special for me as a Filipino-American immigrant because I get to talk about Filipino-American history. More specifically, Filipino-Alaskan history. The month of October has been recognized by the U.S. Congress and by several state legislatures as Filipino-American History Month to celebrate the long history of Filipinos in the United States. So happy Filipino-American History Month, everyone. When we talk about Filipino-Americans, though, the states that people most easily think of are California and Hawaii. Very few think of Alaska, but Filipino-Americans in Alaska have just as long and just as rich of a history as any other Filipino-American community in the country. So today, we devote the entire episode to discussing this history, along with Filipino-Alaskans' many achievements and contributions, because Filipino-Alaskan history is Alaskan history, and Filipino-American history is American history. Today, we have two guests joining us, both very good friends of mine. The first is Dr. Gabriel Garcia, who is a Philippine-born, Alaska-grown professor of public health at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. He completed his PhD in public health with a minor in anthropology at UCLA. His research interests include Filipino health and experiences, racial and ethnic health disparities, and Asian and Pacific Islander health. He is also the coordinator of UAA's Master of Public Health program. Dr. Garcia is the recipient of many awards, including the Chancellor's Award for Excellence in Community Service, Chancellor's Award for Excellence in Diversity, and the Center for Community Engagement and Learning's Community Builder Award. Dr. Garcia, along with a group of UAA faculty and students, were awarded the UAA Stewardship Award in 2014 and the American Lung Association in Alaska's Breathe Easy Champion Award in 2015 for the group's successful effort in making the University of Alaska system smoke and tobacco free. In 2015, Dr. Garcia was appointed as one of the health commissioners of the Anchorage Health Department. Good morning, Dr. Garcia.
Good morning, EJ. Happy Filipino American History Month to you and to your listeners. And also, I'm thankful for being able to live, work, and play on the lands of the Dena'ina people. Thanks for having me.
Salamat. Thank you for joining us today. Also joining us this morning is Marie Husa, who was born in Manila, Philippines, and has been an Alaskan since 1984. She is an investigator for the Anchorage Equal Rights Commission, investigating discrimination complaints. She holds a master's degree in counseling psychology from Alaska Pacific University and is a licensed professional career and life coach. She is a past president and board member of the Alaska Federation of Filipino Americans. She lives in Anchorage with her husband of 26 years. They have two daughters, one attending law school in Seattle University and one studying business and psychology at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Marie is very active in the community and a well-respected leader in the Anchorage Filipino-American community. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning, EJ, and salamat. Thank you for providing this platform for us to talk about our identities and our history in America.
Thank you for joining us this morning, Marie. Salamat. Mm-hmm. And to our listeners, you can join the conversation too. Do you have thoughts about the Filipino community in Alaska? Do you have interesting historical information you want to share that pertains to Filipinos in Alaska? Are you Filipino-Alaskan yourself? And do you have some stories you want to share? Or maybe you just want to say hello and say what's up? You can call us at 1-888-353-5752. Or if you're in Anchorage, call us at 550-8433. You can also reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right, so let's begin. Marie, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about Filipino American history? Like, how far back have Filipinos been in the United States?
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to believe, but it's 1500s, 1587, and it's coming up a big anniversary, October 18, 1587. Wow. You know, back then when we were under Spanish rule, so trading business was done by ships, right? We don't have airline cargoes back then. So everything is by ship. And so in one of this expedition, a Spanish trading ship, Filipinos were on board a ship, a Spanish ship, and they landed in Morro Bay in California. You know, it was the first landing. They were there for a few days, but the first settlement was not until 1763, where again, you know, Filipinos on board a Spanish ship established a settlement in what's called St. Malo, which was about 25 miles southeast of what is now New Orleans. And that's where they settled for a while, and they were even known back then to establish the shrimp drying process that I believe is still used still in Louisiana
today.
And so all this great history, I'm thankful for, and a great resource would be the Filipino-American National Historical Society, and it is founded by such insightful leaders, Dr. Dorothy Ligo Cordova and Fred Cordova. They established it in 1982, but 30 years back, they have led the way to celebrate October as Filipino-American History Month to talk about the significance of the Filipino-American Filipino-American contributions in the U.S. today. So I'm thankful that, again, you're providing this platform for us to talk about what those important contributions are.
Thank you. Thank you for giving us that historical context, Marie. Gabe, do you have something to add to that?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say a little disclosure here. I'm not a historian, but one of the things.
Oh, me either.
and a lot of the things that I've learned about Filipino American history was actually back in college. I'd like to point that out because Filipino American history is part of American history, and this is something that we should be teaching, as early as elementary. Grade school students. But with my knowledge of Filipino American history, you know, from my college courses, just to add to what Marie mentioned, you know, we have a rich history too here in Alaska, Filipino Alaskans, and so I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And a lot of the research done on Filipino Alaskan history was really done by the late, great Auntie Thelma Garcia Buchholz. And she's done a lot of research in Filipino-Alaskan history. And the first Filipinos arrived in Alaska actually back in 1788 in Southwest Alaska. So that is actually pretty cool. You know, I never knew about that when my family first migrated here in Alaska. I never knew about the Filipino-Alaskan history. And like I said, I didn't learn it until college. But anyway, back in 1788 was the first time Filipino-Alaskans came to Alaska. In 1791, they were in Yakutat. And I believe in 1848, they were in the area called Point Hope. And so a lot of the first Filipinos that came here really came from whaling ships. And thereafter, early 1900s, they were working in the canneries. And back then, they were called Alasqueros when they were working the canneries.
Yeah. Thank you, Gabe. We'll get back to the Alasqueros here, in a little bit. We will spend a lot more time on that here in a little bit. But I do want to, thank you both for providing a really long historical context here when we talk about Filipino-American history. A lot of people may not know that. You know, Marie, you said, the first documented landing of people that we now consider Filipinos, because back then they were not known as Filipinos yet, right? They were known as Luzones Indios. At least that's what they were referred to. But their first documented landing in what is now called the United States, because back then it was not even called the United States yet. It is now called Morro Bay, California.
Morro Bay.
October 18, 1587, which is the reason why October is Filipino American History Month. And again, thank you for mentioning the Filipino American National Historical Society there, who have been celebrating Filipino-American History Month since 1992. If you're interested in learning more about FONS, the Filipino-American National Historical Society, or learning more about Filipino-American history, you can go to their website, which is fanhs-national.org. You know, one thing that I want to say, again, I want to emphasize that this was long before there was even a United States, right? Because the United States was founded in 1776. And there were already Luzones Indios in the continental United States since 1763. Of course, we know that there were also indigenous peoples on these lands way, way before that also. But again, it just shows us how long of a history Filipino Americans have had in these lands. And so now, you know, just shifting gears a little bit here to Filipino-Alaskan history, you know, as Gabe was talking about earlier, you know, it also goes way back, right? Dr. Garcia, you said, you know, that they're part of whaling ships. You know, that's the other thing that I think is important to point out, in that, you know, colonialism, you know, had a big part in this, right? Had a big part in why Filipinos have been on these lands now for such a long time, right? They were part of, you know, European, Spanish whaling ships because, you know, these European ships took them from the Philippines, either as cheap workers or as slaves or as cheap laborers, and, you know, brought them in their expeditions across the world. So, you know, Spanish colonialism and European colonialism more generally is a big part of this Filipino-American history. And so now, again, focusing more now on Filipino-Alaskan history. Dr. Garcia, you mentioned the Alasqueros. What are the Alasqueros? What is that term anyway? And who does it refer to?
Yeah, great question. So as I mentioned a while ago, the early Filipinos here in the early 1900s were working in the canneries. And since they are working here in Alaska, they term themselves as Alasqueros. And like I said, they have been working here for quite some time in the early 1900s in different parts of Alaska, being a part of the cannery workforce. So that was a really interesting story for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, when Filipino Americans first moving in large numbers to what is now considered as the United States. This was the beginning, like around the 1900s, beginning of the 1900s. They were recruited to work in the plantations of Hawaii, in the farms of California, mm-hmm. right, Washington, all the way to Montana. So they followed the seasons, right? They followed the crops depending mm-hmm. on the season. And then, of course, one of the seasons that they followed is the fishing season. Right, in Alaska. And so, you know, many of those Filipino farm workers in the western United States also moved to Alaska during the fishing season to work in the canneries. And as Dr. Garcia said, they called themselves Alasqueros. Marie, do you have anything to add about the Alasqueros?
Yes, actually, what I also want to echo is the lack of Filipino history curriculum, because I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't really very interested in history in school, but coming here, you know, being here in the U.S. and in Anchorage for the last 36 some years, you know, I got to question that, and it's like, why are we here? You know, and so it was actually through modern-day Alasqueros, which I want to say that you, Gabe, and Christine Marasigan, who she should be here today, because yeah. she has boatload of information on Filipino-American history. Mm-hmm. And Mara Chris, mm-hmm. you know, you UAA group that founded that, I learned so much from your events, and mm-hmm. really knowing about our Filipino history just really emphasizes that we are an important part of this community. So it really is just very validating of what we're doing here, and that we are part of the community. But as far as Alascaros, yes, I want to add that, of course, you know, back then, 1898 is when the Spanish rule ended and the U.S. Mm-hmm. basically took over, mm-hmm. right? So we mm-hmm. were under Spanish rule or American rule by then, 1898. Uh-huh. And so that started kind of the migration of cheap labor out of the Philippines, because by then we are American nationals, mm-hmm. you know, we can travel, but we cannot vote or own property. Mm-hmm. But Filipinos were basically dispatched everywhere. I mean, wherever cheap labor was needed. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like you said, so working in farms, right, in mm-hmm. California, agriculture, and in Alaska, just really everything started, right? Mm-hmm. Fishing, mining, just like you said, yeah, even whaling crews, so fur trading. We were in everything, which I was like impressed. It's like, wow, we were all over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, Marie. Yeah, mm-hmm. so myself and Dr. Garcia, mm-hmm. Also Dr. Joy Mapaye, who was also a mm-hmm. professor at UAA,
yes.
Maria Crisca Labayan and Christine Marasigan, you know, it's been a pleasure working with all of them over, you know, these years. To share as much about Filipino American history and culture to the larger community. So thank you for giving us a shout out. I appreciate that. But yeah, no, the Alasqueros, and also I like to thank you for mentioning the gold mines. You know, because mm-hmm. Filipinos did come to Alaska to help with the gold mines as well. But also, you know, another thing is laying out the cable crews. You know, this was when mm-hmm. Alaska was you know, beginning to lay out some infrastructure. And so Filipinos were also dispatched to Alaska to help lay out cable for communication in 1903, right? So, you know, these are really the beginning of the Alasqueros, right? And so, Gabe, I want to go back to you because you have some work on this a little bit, but not so much about the contemporary experiences yet. I want to get to that later. But can you tell us a little bit about the experiences of the early Alasqueros and what they faced in these canneries throughout Alaska in the early 1900s?
Yeah. Before I get to that, I just wanted to mention, too, that there were famous Filipino-Americans in history that have come here in Alaska to be part of, you know, working in the canneries. Mm-hmm. Just to name a couple, one is Larry Itliong, mm-hmm. who is a famous labor leader, mm-hmm. and Carlos Gulosan, who is a mm-hmm. famous Filipino-American writer. So both of those prominent Filipino-Americans actually came here and worked here in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And being in Alaska and working in Alaska in the canneries, you know, it's not easy. Back then, working conditions are poor. They didn't get paid a lot. They are subject for discrimination. So, and in the places where they stay, you know, many of them stay in their small rooms with a lot of other cannery workers. Mm. And so,
hello, Gabe, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And so it wasn't a, you know, it while they're here in Alaska working and, you know, earning some money, it wasn't that great experience for them in that they were subject to poor working conditions, discrimination, and, you know, low wages.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for bringing in some folks there. You specifically mentioned Carlos Bulosan. For the listeners who may not know, Carlos Bulosan is one of the more prominent Filipino Americans in history. He's a very prolific writer. And for those of you who love to read, I highly recommend his book called America is in the Heart. Right now, though, we are getting ready to take our first break. So again, thank you to Marie Husa and Gabe Garcia for joining us this morning and for contextualizing Filipino-American history and Filipino-Alaskan history to us just a few minutes ago. Right now, we're going to take a quick break. You are listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is EJ David. If you have anything to share, you can join our conversation by calling 1-888-353-5752 or 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage. You can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, EJ David, speaking with Gabriel Garcia and Marie Husa. We are talking about Filipino-Alaskan history specifically. So if you have any relevant experiences or thoughts to share, give us a call at 1-888-353-5752 or locally in Anchorage, 550-8433. Don't forget to dial in 907 with that as well. You can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So prior to our break, we were talking about Filipino-Alaskan history and really focusing on the experiences of Alasqueros. And as, you know, Gabe Garcia mentioned prior to the break, one of the more famous Alasqueros is a man named Larry Itliong, who is also one of the more well-known Filipino-American leaders. Let's start with Gabe. Gabe, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about who Larry Itliong is and why he became quite prominent?
So Larry Itliong has been is considered a important Filipino-American history because he was a labor leader back in mid-1900s and then to the 1960s. He was actually the one that started the United Farm Workers. He partnered with the famous Cesar Chavez to go on the strikes against the leaders of his plantations in California because of the poor working conditions and low wages. And so they started this partnership and basically went on strike to let the plantation owners know about the importance of the issues that they are experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Not a lot of people, well, let me rephrase this. Many people, a lot more people, might know who Cesar Chavez is or was and his amazing contributions to union organizing and to the farm workers' rights. But not very many people know about Larry Itliong. Larry Itliong and Cesar Chavez actually worked together. They were partners in organizing the Filipino farm workers and the Mexican farm workers that led to the United Farm Workers, which then, you know, really improved workers' rights, farm workers' rights specifically, in the United States. So Larry Itliong really is just as instrumental to that as Cesar Chavez. was. So thank you for bringing that in. And one other thing that I want to add, just putting this all together, is that, you know, as we mentioned earlier, Larry Itliong worked in Alaska, so he was also an Alaskero. And he also actually got some organizing, you know, and workers' rights organizing experience here in Alaska as he was trying to help the cannery workers, you know, get better wages and have better working conditions. So in many ways, what led to his work in Delano with Cesar Chavez, a lot of that was sharpened by his experiences with union organizing here in Alaska as well. So thank you for bringing that up, Gabe. Right now, though, I want to bring in a clip of a song for just, you know, a little bit here, maybe a minute. And I want us all to just listen to this and try to listen to the lyrics as best as we can. And then I'll ask our guests to share their thoughts here. So.
From Nova Bay to the East Bay, we stay surviving where we stay. They keep in vain where we lay. There's no debating that we pay. That naval base up in Subic Bay to all the places that they tried to take. From Magellan States to Phillips Rain, where the land was raped and they changed the way. To my father drowning in the alcohol. Then my mama always be up in the Escanol, cause these thoughts make the brown skin start to crawl. So I take the cushion just to break the fall. Second class citizen, never been one. Traded the peso so we can have one. Darker the skin and you scared of the sun. Silence to speak with an accent and tongue. All of these faces, I'm looking like none. Taught to forget all the places I'm from. But we grew up on the barrio and slums. My aunties be drinking that red horse and rum. Never be stopping, the work's never done. Long as they keep on corrupting the funds. Thinking the damage is done and they won. But we stay militant, daughters and sons. Let's take it back to the day of first grade. All of you thinking of throwing me shade. My people are roses that grew in the shade. We came up in places exploited by trade. I kill them with a bar so hot, cause it's top notch. Thinking that your top might stop, not on my watch. Like it's 12:30 on the dot on the clock watch. All I see your hands up and down when the beat drops.
And we're good. So that was Ruby Ibarra, one of her songs. It's called Taking Names. Ruby is this amazing poet, spoken word poet and rapper from the Bay Area. You know, really inspiring the young generation right now. So anyway, before I say even more about that, Marie, let's start with you. Any thoughts on that song?
Yeah, that. Where do we begin? First of all, really just bravo to Ruby Ibarra because, you know, as a rapper and as a poet, she is a great role model for young Filipino Americans and just really young people in her activism.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the lyrics, if you actually read the lyrics, like I said, there's so much stuff to digest mm-hmm. in that. But you know, from Morro Bay to East Bay, you know, mm-hmm. now your listeners know about Morro Bay. Mm-hmm. We stay surviving where we stay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just really are survivors and we make the best. I think it's a great characterization of who we are as Filipinos. But, you know, one thing that really catches my attention there is when she says, and then my mama always be up in that Escanol.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
for your listeners, Escanol is a brand of a skin whitening product.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that always struck me coming from the Philippines to here and how there's tanning beds. You know, people go tanning to darken their skin. So that to me was when I first came here. Mm-hmm. was really baffling. It's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, back in the Philippines, as you know, the whiter, the better. Mm-hmm. There's that misconception from colonialism that I, you know, sad to say, is still
mm-hmm.
Alive. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of people's minds, and that's why events like this, a forum, you know, Filipino Community Month, Filipino American History Month is so important, and forums like this to talk about history because we don't have to be anyone else other than who we are.
Mm.
And so I hope we hear messages and that Filipinos hear more messages like that. Mm. And to really know, like you said, Cesar Chavez, probably people have heard of his name, even if they don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But Larry Itliong, people have to know his name too, because the Delano, California strike, grape strike, he was the one who organized the strike first, and through his negotiation skills, brought in the Mexicans so that, you know, there's more power in numbers. And so he was a great negotiator, and that he increased the numbers of people on strike, and he got a Mexican. So that was a great effort for him to convince the Mexicans to join. But yeah, so there's all this great Filipino American leaders, like Ruby is now to this day. At least she's the modern day Filipino hero speaking about us Filipinos.
Yes, the younger generations. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your thoughts there, Marie. Gabe, what about you? What do you think of that song?
Well, listening to Ruby Ibarra give me a sense of pride. Well, first of all, because we went to the same school, I went to college at David, and you know, it just makes me a proud alum of that school to hear her succeed in this in this manner. But a lot of things can be. There was a lot of things that she covered in that very short segment of a song or a rap that you played there. In that song, you can hear the pain, the struggle, and the pride all combined together. And you can also see, you know, hear from that song the connection of the past and the present, and from the Philippines to the Filipino-American history. So all of those things are packed in that very short segment of the rap that you played here on the radio, and so yeah, it was just, you know, it just shows how great of an artist and intellectual she is to be able to share that in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, in 1 minute, right? No, it really is powerful, you know, and I really am very thankful to Ruby, you know, and other, you know, folks, you know, who use their talent, who use their skills, who use their platform to inspire other people, you know, and to educate and to even agitate, right, the community into organizing, into making things better for everybody, right? And this is actually related to this year's Filipino American History Month theme, which is 50 years since the Filipino Far West Convention. So this was a gathering 50 years ago of young Filipino Americans in the West Coast to talk about the issues that they're facing. So they were organizing, right? They were trying to make systemic changes 50 years ago. And many people consider that convention as the beginning of Filipino American studies. And also I want to add, you know, in Ruby's song there, she alluded to a lot of things, right? Like about, you know, working with, working against systemic oppression. You know, earlier we were talking about Filipino-American farm workers working with Mexican farm workers, you know, to create change. Focusing more on Filipino-Alaskans and Filipino-Alaskan history, there's also a long history of Filipino-Alaskans working in solidarity with other communities, like with Alaska Native peoples, for example, fighting against racism and discrimination in the mid-1900s. So, you know, so that's very true here in Alaska as well. In fact, many Alasqueros, even though many Alasqueros, you know, would follow the crops, as we were talking about earlier, and after fishing season go back to, you know, California and Washington, many Alasqueros actually stayed in Alaska and started families in Alaska, you know, oftentimes with Alaska Native women, because, you know, Filipinos and Alaska Natives were both kind of segregated together back then. And so, you know, so they started families. So there has been, you know, Alaska Native Filipino families and individuals for several generations now. Many Alaska Native Filipinos actually have grown up to become quite prominent and well-known Alaskan leaders throughout the years. So now I want to focus a little bit more to more recent history, Filipino-Alaskan history. And I want to start with Gabe with this one. Gabe, you mentioned Manang Thelma Garcia Buchholz earlier in the show. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about who Manang Thelma Garcia Buchholz was.
Yeah, so Thelma is a prominent Filipino-American from Alaska. She migrated here from the Philippines, and she was the first Filipino-American legislator here in our state, and perhaps the first Filipino-American legislator in the nation. Mm-hmm. And so that's something to be proud of. And I know that as a legislator here in our state, she worked on very important issues, and she's accomplished a lot. I know that she was also part of, very helpful in creating programs here in our state that still live on until to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Manang Thelma, again, she was the first of many. She not only made Filipino-Alaskan history, she made Filipino-American history. She made American history. So I think she's definitely someone that Alaskans, not just Filipino-Alaskans, but Alaskans should be proud of. So thank you. Marie, do you have anything to add about Manang Thelma?
Yes, I think we should also note, trailblazer, I think.
Uh-huh.
That, she really trailblazer, just a big person of, we need to have more people like her to follow in her footsteps, to be in government or to be just really involved in affecting change in Alaska, right? She's paved the way for us. And we should also note that after she served in the legislature, she went to law school. Mm. So this woman was just determined, and just also the book she wrote about Filipinos in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Full of great stories too. Filipinos in Alaska, 1788 to 1958.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a lot of great accomplishments.
Yeah. again, Manang Thelma, many accomplishments, but again, she, mm-hmm. she stood up to people in power, and she advocated for many marginalized communities. And she also collaborated, with other communities too. So, again, just an amazing, amazing woman. Yeah, go ahead, Marie.
Oh, no. Also, if we can just add a visual to that, because I've never met her, but I heard she's not that tall and dark-skinned Filipino. Can you just imagine what that was? She was in the House of Representatives 1974 to 1982, and diversity in color was not very rich at the time. So just imagine what she was up against.
Uh-huh.
And that's just a testimony of what a fighter she is to fight for civil rights and justice for everybody who needed it.
Yeah. Our email, Hometown Alaska's email right now is blowing up. Just loving that we're talking about Manang Thelma. A lot of people loved her. So yes, thank you all for sending your emails here. I also want to bring in a comment from one of the emails from someone from Dillingham. Who grew up in Dillingham, and this person said, not Dillingham, in Valdez. This person said, in old Valdez, we were in awe of the Filipino cannery workers who arrived in town every summer. We all knew, as kids know everything, that they were the fastest and the most expert with the knives. We knew no one messed with them. So this is what this person shared over email. And like I said, many Alaska Native Filipinos, who are products of Alasqueros and Alaska Native, marriages, grew up to become prominent leaders in the Alaska Native community. And we have several emails from people, mentioning and naming some of those folks. So thank you all for sending your emails. Really quickly, Gabe, earlier I alluded to, the more contemporary experiences of Filipinos in the canneries. We talked about their experiences early in the 19 to mid, 1900s. But you've done some recent research about their experiences now in the canneries. Can you share with our audience a little bit about what you found?
Sure. Back in 2015, I had the opportunity to do research over in Unalaska, Dutch Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And just to get a better understanding of what the conditions are for Filipino Americans working in the fishing industry over there in the Dutch Harbor community, and spent a week there talking with Filipino Americans, talking about their work. Had the opportunity to observe in the fish processing plant where they work, and it was, you know, after that experience of the whole week, it just totally changed my mind in terms of how I looked at our fish processed food that we eat. In that there's so much work that is involved in that, and there's a lot of Filipino American hands that got on that fish to clean the fish, to get the fish and to process them. Like I said, there's a lot of Filipino Americans working in the fishing plants, fish processing plants there at Dutch Harbor. I got a chance to even visit the kind of rooms that they have there, where they stay and sleep there, you know, through the entire fishing season. And you could see four or five Filipinos staying in a very small room with one bathroom, and then when you go inside a plant, it's cold and wet, and it's really a tough condition. So the main story here really is that the working conditions may have improved a little bit for our modern day Alaskaras, as you would say, but the experience, the struggle, the pain that comes with working in fish processing plant is still there. The wages are not as great either. And so I know that a lot of the Filipinos that Filipino Americans have worked there either send money to their family in the Philippines or their family in the lower 48. And working there in the fish processing plant, allows them to just concentrate on making money, because there's nothing else to spend there except just to work, and you know, whatever money that they save, like I said, they'll just send it to their families either in the lower 48 or in the Philippines. So yeah, decades later, after the Las Caras that we were talking about a while ago, working conditions are, you know, haven't really that improved that much, and wages are still not as great.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Gabe. And we'll come back to that a little bit here, but later. But right now, we have to take a break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is EJ David speaking with Dr. Gabriel Garcia and Marie Husa about the Filipino-American community. Are you a Filipino-Alaskan? Do you have relevant experiences or thoughts you want to share? Do you know prominent Filipino-Alaskans out there? You want to give us a call and share some stories? Call us at 1-888-353-5752 or 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage. You can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is EJ David, or EJ David, the more Filipino way to pronounce it. Speaking with Marie Husa and Gabriel Garcia. We are talking about Filipino-Alaskan history. You can join our conversation too by calling 1-888-353-5752, or if you're in Anchorage, 550-8433. You can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Prior to the break, Gabe Garcia was sharing about the modern experiences of fish cannery workers. Many of them are still Filipinos. Many of them are Filipinos who come to Alaska just to work for the fishing season. And as you know, Dr. Garcia was mentioning before the break, their working conditions really haven't changed much. It's still a struggle, it's still difficult, their wages still aren't that great. And You know, not too long ago, in 2014, we actually had a tragedy happen here in Anchorage, where a Filipino modern day Alaskero who came up to work in the fishing industry for the season, while he was in Anchorage, he was beaten up and he was murdered. And so, you know, so these are still very real issues and very real stories that we have even to this day. So I just want to shift now to talk a little bit more about the now, right? We've been talking a lot about history. Actually, you know what? Before I get there, we have a caller right now that I think I want to bring in because it's relevant to what we were just talking about before we shift gears. So, Kira, I believe you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just got married this summer, and my wife is Filipino, and she came here with the army, and having a Filipino community here has been really meaningful to her. It's the way that she found friends in the army, and it's the thing that makes her feel closer to home. You know, when we go to the Spinard Farmer's Market, and she can buy Filipino pastries and things that remind her of home. And I also just wanted to share that this morning she had a success. I went to the Army base and participated in her ceremony for promotion.
Nice.
She just to sergeant. And so there are some really exciting things happening, and people can make it sort of on their own, but also with the support of the Filipino community.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Kira, for calling in. Congratulations to your wife, too, by the way, on that promotion. But yeah, so this is, you know, very relevant to what we're shifting gears toward now, which is, you know, the more contemporary experiences of Filipino Alaskans. You know, so with Kira's story, you know, it's the military, right? Again, this is not just contemporary, though. This is also historical. Like, a lot of Filipinos moved to Alaska through the military. And so I kind of want to ask, starting with Marie really quickly here and then going on to Gabe. So Marie, can you talk a little bit more about the contemporary experiences and numbers of Alaska, of Filipinos in Alaska?
Yeah, I don't think we get enough attention being, you know, since we've been here for so long that our numbers have increased as far as immigrants in Alaska. I mean, you just see us everywhere. I mean, I think nobody can deny that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, but at the same time, you know, I think it also has, there's still a disproportionate effect of some of issues, kind of, let me start, like COVID. You know, mm-hmm. We have a lot of nurses here, and I'm sure if you've been to any of our hospitals, Filipinos are nurses, medical assistants. But there was a study from California that although Filipino nurses are make up, well, here's 33%, a third of the nurses who've died of COVID in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
are Filipinos.
Mm-hmm.
So a third of the nurses, total nurses who've died of COVID in the U.S. are Filipinos.
Mm-hmm.
But Filipino nurses only make up 4% of the nursing mm-hmm. population nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
So although you see us everywhere, especially, like I said, with COVID, we're frontline workers. There's a lot of people, like I said, mm-hmm. medical industry and retail, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to be aware of the issues, economic issues, you know, and family, how it's affecting our families, because there's so many of us and we're more often in the front lines of this. So I think that's maybe a an issue that we are dealing with right now.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for bringing that up. You know, actually, I'm planning on devoting a full episode on Filipino nurses and their experiences, especially during COVID times. So right. Thank you for giving our audience a preview of that already. But thank you also for mentioning that, because, you know, in addition to the military, where a lot of Filipinos, you know, that's like the vehicle through which many Filipinos make it to the United States. Another large vehicle through which Filipinos make it to the United States is the healthcare industry, right? Primarily as nurses. So thank you for bringing that up too. Gabe, what about you? Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, current numbers of Filipinos in Alaska? What can you say, say about that?
Yeah, so Filipinos are, you know, the largest immigrant group here in Alaska, and there are even places in Alaska where there are a lot of Filipinos. For example, in Alaska, you know, around 30% of the population there are Filipinos. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, the second largest racial ethnic minority group here in our state. So you know, things like that makes you just realize how big of community we are. And as you have mentioned a while ago, EJ, you know, there's a lot of migration coming here from different, you know, for different reasons. You know, you sort of mentioned the veterans, you know, World War II veterans, for example, they brought their family here. A lot of the, you know, the older families here in Anchorage, for example, came here because of the contribution of their fathers who were serving in the military and fighting in World War II with the U.S. soldiers. Mm-hmm. You know, families like the Legardas, the Sobre Peñas, the those people came here because of fighting alongside the U.S. soldiers back in World War II. Mm-hmm. And then we have a lot of professionals, and, you know, professionals, like you mentioned, healthcare workers, engineers, architects, and now more recently, teachers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are going to the Philippines to get those professionals to be working here, to work in jobs that where we really need people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for bringing all of that up, Gabe. You know, I just want to add on to what you shared, right? So again, Filipinos are the largest Asian group in Alaska, like easily, like 50% of the Asian population in Alaska are Filipinos. Filipinos also are the largest immigrant group in the state. You know, when we look at other states in the country, the largest immigrant group is usually Mexicans. But Alaska is unique in that the largest immigrant group here are Filipinos. There are also, you know, like Gabe said, long histories of Filipino families, you know, multiple generations now have been in Alaska. There's been a lot of different organizations, community organizations, you know, in Alaska, you know, and Marie, you know, was the past president of one of them, the Alaska Federation of Filipino Americans. You know, and as Gabe said, there are many different cities or towns throughout Alaska with large percentage of its populations being Filipino. You know, Dutch Harbor in Alaska, Gabe said, you know, about 30% are Filipino. Kodiak, I want to give a shout out to Kodiak, 34%. Filipinos. You know, we had an email earlier from Cordova, and, you know, I mean, 10% Filipinos. Ketchikan, also around 10% Filipinos. All the way up to Utqiagvik, all the way up to the Arctic Ocean, you know, which is about 8% Filipino. And of course, Juneau, right? Juneau has a long history, you know, of Filipinos. So again, you know, Filipinos have been all over Alaska and have been around in Alaska for a very long time. So thank you all for bringing that up. And just real quick, we only have a few minutes left here. I want to go to you know, a couple of other questions. I want to start with Gabe on this one. Gabe, what are your visions of Filipino Alaskans? Like right now, we're talking about long history, large numbers, right? We are a significant percentage of the population. Right? What is your vision of what Filipino Alaskans can and must do? What do you hope to see, you know, the community to be doing in the future? Go for it, Gabe.
I think it starts with celebrating and recognizing the long history of Filipino Americans here in our state and in the nation. I think that recognition will help inspire future generations about the potential of their potential and what they could do, but also realize the sacrifices of many of our ancestors who paved the way for us here. And so my vision is that, and hope that we will have a community who will be educated about Filipino American history.
Thank you for that, Gabe. What about you, Marie? What do you hope to see Filipino Alaskans to be doing in the future? You know, especially with our long history and large numbers.
Exactly. I want us to have our seat at the table where decisions are being made about our future, about our families, about our education. If you look at our political leaders, or even in management positions in government, local, state, federal, where are we? Where are we in those positions? We need to be there. I think there's this thinking that we're like forever guests in this country. And I think with celebration and education of Filipino American history, I hope that we send the message to our Filipino community that we belong here. We are on every aspect of the economy of this country, of this state, and we deserve our place in the decision-making because it affects all of us. And, you know, kind of what I like to say, we are here because they were there, speaking of the Americans being in the Philippines. And our history will tell the story of why we're here because of that. And I think because of that, we deserve to make the decisions and we deserve to be heard. And so I hope my vision for us Filipinos is to be more engaged and learn and be proud and be proud. And this History Month is more than just heritage. It's more than just about our food, which no doubt is great. And our dances, I think everyone, a lot of people have seen our dances, which in itself is fabulous and important to our heritage. But more than that, we need to see the importance of our history because that's a great part of our identity.
Thank you so much, Marie. Unfortunately, we are out of time, sorry. Filipinos have a long and rich history in Alaska. You know, this topic is so important and definitely deserving of our thoughts, our hearts, and our time. So I hope you continue thinking about the Filipino American members of our community and learning about them and from them. But for now, we have to say goodbye. So salamat, thanks for joining us today in Hometown Alaska. Salamat to Gabe Garcia and Marie Husa for sharing your thoughts and experiences and expertise. Our audio engineer today was Dave Emmert, and I'm EJ David. Salamat for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.